You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm experiencing testing. Testing 1, 2.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Somebody give me some feedback. Let me know that I'm being heard. I'm having some serious difficulties here. Let me know that I'm being heard on Time for an Awakening. Okay, I got some feedback. I am being heard. But I'm experiencing some technical difficulties with my intro, and so I'm going to have to abandon that. I'm not going to be able to do anything with that. So this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, but any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, aside from this program, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans every Monday and Wednesday from 7 to 9. On Thursdays, Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, from 8 to 10 with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Friday, this evening at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday, from 5 to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I tell you, I've been experiencing all kinds of problems. Got a problem with my laptop, a problem with this. Oh, well, you know, things happen. And you just got to go with the flow. Ashe, ashe. So, whew. Yeah. Let me read from the Inya. The Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. So, okay. January 9th, we take this blood oath so that one day the children and the unborn will take the same oath in our names, Mukasa Africa. We owe each and every African ancestor who contributed to the identification, study, building, and sustaining and passing down of the African way. We owe them beyond human measure, for without them, we would not be here, nor be as we are. The only way that we can ever hope to repay them for their work on our behalf is to be them in every way we think, say, and do, offering others the African possibility by example. Studying their wisdom tells us that they recognized our efforts at this time and in this place as an ongoing process of reacclimation and re-Africanization nation building. We can but hope that they continue to contribute to our study of their uncompromising traditions of personal obligation. And we ask only that they open our minds to the warrior's reason for giving the deepest and most sincere reverence for what has always worked for us so that we and our future generations of Africans can safely come back home. The Ugandans say, a promise is a debt. Our debt to them is immeasurable. Yet we warrior scholars promise to fully and gratefully pay this debt. To this end, we take the oath with our blood, knowing what it means to us, them, and all our descendants. Affirm, I swear to love and defend African people with my very blood. Affirm, I swear to defend, to love and defend African people with my very blood. I say, and I'm serious about it. January 10th, every man teaches as he acts. Ptah Hotep. As strange as that sounds, there are two ways Africans can attain internal peace. The African way, a genuine harmony, and the European way, a delusional one. We can mentally, actively, and wholly locate ourselves in either reality. But there is a difference. European sanity requires that Africans be turned away from themselves. African sanity requires that Africans be turned into themselves and instinctively away from Europeans. One cannot do both. You cannot be both. It is simple as that. When there is a compromise between what you know and has to be done to save our people and what you are willing to compromise to be safe can be done, there can be no peace. This is true for most of us. Most of us operate somewhere between African sanity and European sanity, caught in a chaotic state of delusion. We know when there is a contradiction between what we say and what we do, between what we know and what we do, between what we must know must be done, and what we settle for. When you know you are not uncompromisingly acting as who you know you are, peace is not possible. Such contradictions are not evident in those of us who know we must answer to the ancestors and our children if we choose not to be African. Only when what we know must be done matches what we are doing is there an African sanity. Let me repeat. Only when
this call may be recorded or transcribed.
Only when we know we must do matches what we are doing is there an African sanity. To fully embrace a heritage of excellence and rebellion in order to return to the excellent drives one toward an African sanity, the only authentic peace for African. I'll read it again. To fully embrace a heritage of excellence and rebellion in order to return to excellence drives one toward an African sanity. The only authentic peace for African people. Affirm, I think and act within the African peace. Affirm, I think and act within African peace. January 11th. To be always answering questions and mounting defenses about things you thought were obvious keeps you from doing your work. Toni Morrison. Terms like clan and tribe are only problematic in the context of the historical and contemporary interpretations of indigenous people by European political science. They automatically become problematic in our minds because they have been defined as inferior by European scholars. And that is true. I don't like to use them, but that is true. We have the same problem when looking at hereditary as defined genetically because of the racial labels and qualities that scientific eugenics racist theories attributed to us vis-a-vis Europeans during an enslavement and ever since. But in and of themselves, neither hereditary nor descriptive terms such as clan or tribe are problematic. It is the negative definitions given to them by this Caucasian supremacist cultural context and the mental societal context out of which most of us think, which elevates extreme individualism over that of duty and responsibility to community. That makes those of us who want to identify with our traditions reject such naturally unifying terms out of hand. Affirm, I speak within the context of community. I speak within the context of community. Ashe, brothers and sisters, the Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Boy, I tell you, and because I've had a very hectic morning already, I chose to do a Yo Show Friday, so anything that you want to talk about, anything that you want to bring up, we can do that, okay? Even though the intro was messed up, I don't know what's happening with that. We'll figure that out. I get my brother over here. I'm not the one, so we can figure this out. But we won't do it today. It's snowing, man. It's snowing here in the ATL. And then later on, it's going to be freezing rain, which is going to compound things, you know. So, no, today's not a day to be getting out. Today is a day to chill. Hope you, and I know a lot of people, because, you know, they've talked about this was going to happen since like Monday, Tuesday. And they kept showing what is coming our way. And so many people yesterday and the day before were at the stores and cleaning off the shelves. I mean, but the thing is, it's not going to last for, you know, they act like the shit was going to be all weekend and all day next week, something like that. You know, the sun will shine tomorrow, supposedly. The temperature on Sunday will be, you know, this will be gone. Yeah, but that's how it is, you know. So, yeah. But that's how it is, family. So we're going to open up the phone lines. Give us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. I will go into a few things that people have sent me. And, you know, because that can spur conversation, you know. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to spur conversation. And if you have something that, you know, that is on your mind that you want to discuss, yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about it. There's a few things that people send, and you know, on Instagram and on on Instagram and on Messenger, and so it's always cool. You get some stuff from Messenger that people send me, you know, and I go through those things and play them back, and I appreciate it very much. So I'm going to find some of these and play them, and then we'll have conversation, you know. Here's one, Black History and Pan-Africanism, Self-Improvement. The only friends that African people have. And I've said to you many times from Dr. Clark, we have no friends. We have no friends, family. You want a friend? Go look in the mirror. And don't leave the mirror till you like what you see. Not the dimples in your cheeks or how nicely formed your eyebrows are. No. Like who you see historically and culturally. Like who you see with your lips thick and full, your nose spread. Like who you see with your melanated skin. Like who you see as an African. And then like others like you. Like them too. Love them. Work with them. Respect them. Trust them. Work. Believe in them. That's where we must go, family. That's where we must go. Here's a piece.
The only friends Black people have. One, Africa. This is to all my Black brothers and sisters in the diaspora. The only friends that you have are the Africans in Africa. There is almost 2 billion Black people in Africa. If we are going to survive, we'll need our continental African brothers and sisters' help. Two, ancestors. Our ancestors is our biggest allies. This European spends billions of dollars every year to keep you from connecting to your ancestors and their roots. Once we connect to our ancestors, we'll be unstoppable. Three, God. The Almighty God is on our side. God is waiting for us to fight so that he could help us fight. How do you expect God to help you when you aren't even trying to help yourself?
Why are the Black Panthers building their own medical center? Well, first of all, the Black Panther Party, attuned to the needs of black people and other oppressed people, has opened a free medical center for the same purpose we opened a free breakfast center, free breakfast program. It's to let the people know that we are concerned with their basic needs and desires, and also to educate the people to the fundamentals of socialism, and also to heighten the contradictions within this capitalistic system. When I mean heighten the contradictions, all I'm saying is that it's let the people be aware of the fact that the Black Panther Party, an organization which only been existing since 1966, is taking care of people, helping them as far as health care is concerned, and the federal government, with all its wealth and resources, not doing anything on a major scale, you know. We in the Black Panther Party believe that that there is violence in this system. When I say violence, I'm not talking about the overt violence usually associated with the club, the knife, or the gun. I'm talking about the violence perpetuated.
Why are the Black Panthers building?
Right on. Undiscovered ones. Yep. That's, yeah. The only help that we're going to get is from each other. My program today was going to be on the Exodus, and I play Bobby Wright, psychopathic personality, psychopathic racial personality, menticide, and I read from his book, basically setting the tone for why an Exodus must happen. Bobby Wright's claim is that how they are is how they are, and they will continue to do what they do. There's nothing that we can do to change the dynamics of them. We have to change ourselves. That's what I just read to you in the Enyasasim. It's always interesting that the Enyasasim always, you know, it really does. The Enyasasim always seems to me talk about the things I'm going to talk about that day. Yeah, it's the ancestors, folks. It's the ancestors. And you can get this, you can join this conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Sister Ibea, how are you?
Grand Rising.
Good, great Grand Rising, my dear sister. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm fine, yeah.
Yeah, enjoying your program. Yeah. So, you know, I just was, you know, Los Angeles is over there burning.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it was like these rich white areas in Malibu and some other places over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talked with one of my dear sisters over there, and she was just saying, well, Babylon is burning it all, most of the white people. So to the extent that true, although I'm hearing that there was some more spread of it to Altadena, where it's a more African community.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just amazing to me. So they're going to send all these billions and billions of dollars because, you know, in Los Angeles, all these white areas are burning down. And they're saying it's such a shame that the people are homeless. And yeah, that's true. And that, you know, there's a lot of people that was homeless before those big fires started. So
yes,
it needs
yeah.
to be that same kind of empathy and, you know, support
that's,
for
yeah.
them.
Yeah, that's
for
a,
our people that yeah. was laying on the street.
Yeah, that's
you know,
that,
you,
that's
and,
a, that,
and it's a movement about.
Yeah. Well, that what you the point you make is a very good point, sister, because I've been to L.A. a few times. I've been to Skid Row in L.A. And even
yeah.
though the majority of people in L.A., in Southern California, are Latinos and Caucasians than us. In fact, that's pretty much the order. There's a lot of Latinos, much more than even Caucasians, and then us. So we're like the third. But we're the most predominant people living on the streets. We're the most predominant people
yeah,
who are poor.
Yeah.
See? So a lot of times these social ills that we're afflicted by, they're more profound in us than anybody else. And the question we need to ask, this is the same thing that I wanted to talk about in terms of Exodus. Why is that? Because by design, this system is designed to eliminate us. this system of white supremacy, this system of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is designed to exterminate black people, African people. Yeah.
It's so much racism and hypocrisy about it. You know, they had the nerve to say that they was going to, the place all burned down, right? Mm-hmm. And they said they sent in the National Guard to prevent people from looting.
Right.
I mean, how diabolical. You burned everything down, but you want to make sure that there's not no other people to get
is this, you know, something might have burned, but it didn't burn. Then we have seen gutted, pleep. Buildings and homes and so forth. Yes. But there are some that maybe half is burned. And so there are things that can be salvaged. And so looters go in to see what things are salvageable, i.e. jewelry, you know, whatever. And, you know.
Yeah. That emphasis to me is just like they just into this money thing too, that they're going to protect all the burned stuff from, you know, maybe some other people. They got no, you know, don't have, you know, the money in the assets.
Once again, you know, those who are into the money. Yeah, well, those who are poor and those who are destitute in Los Angeles, and believe me, to live in Los Angeles is huge. You got to have serious money. Like to live on both coasts. If you live on the West Coast, or you live on the East Coast, you got to have serious money. Okay. You know, they ain't playing. So those who don't, and the majority of people who don't, is us on both coasts. And so then you're more apt to go out and, you know, take something, steal something, you know. Something out of just, you know, that's something that you want or something that you may need, you know.
Right. And then, you know, so Biden is saying he's sending all these, you know, they're going to give them shelters.
Sure.
Give them homes.
Sure.
Have some of that empathy for the black people that was all there.
They were
and
already
so,
there,
know, there,
huh?
There's
like
a movement to demand that, too. Mm-hmm. That, you know, all these buildings that you send for all the rich people that don't have homes, you know, the money for the Africans that don't have homes, too. It got to be dispensed that way, too. So that was a movement.
Well, sister, I agree with you. It should be equitable. It should be looked at in that way. But once again, we know what we're dealing with. And so I have
living in America.
Yes, I have no illusions. You know, it is what it is, and it's going to be what it is. And ain't a damn thing.
Well, I think the people should still fight for it, though. I mean, it's possible. I mean, if it's all these billions coming, mm-hmm. you know, people pay their taxes, mm-hmm. and you're concerned about people homeless, then it needs to be. I'll support that fight for it.
Okay.
And, you know, you may get some support. Now, they have the sister there. Now, she's a mayor. I can't remember her name.
Yeah,
the mayor.
Karen, what's her name? Bass. Huh? Karen Bass.
Yeah,
she used to be a congressperson.
They tried to attack her for
yeah,
she was in Ghana before it started.
Right.
But, you know, before that, she was fighting for the homeless people.
Right.
And so now, you know, when this needs to come back.
You know, supposedly how I heard it on the news this mm-hmm. morning was that she found out, hold on, let me say it correctly. She heard that the conditions, the Santa Ana winds were coming. It wasn't fire then. She left. She went to Ghana, you know, for whatever reasons, you know.
Yeah, they,
and then, mm-hmm. of course, it happened. She had to scurry back and then, of course, have the press conferences and then to be blasted by some of the people said, well, why weren't you here? What did you do? Why wouldn't you, you know. And it's the same thing with the governor, you know. I remember when it happened before when Trump was president from the 2016 to 2020 as opposed to the 2025 to the, you know, whatever. And he said, you could sweep the ground of the forest to prevent the forest fires. Yeah. Trump is a straight up idiot. But
he is. And did you hear about how he you know, this government is so hypocritical. So he had his so-called sentencing and didn't get no damn sentence.
No, but it's symbolic.
I mean, they could have. He could have paid some money. They talking about they don't want him to do. Why couldn't he have been paying? He should have been paying some money, some fine.
Well, the whole thing was right, but of course. But the whole thing is symbolism without substance. He was able, through whatever mechanisms, and I believe there were, you know, some bull, that he became once again president of the United States. He should have been in prison. All the things that this man has done is just ridiculous. That's why, to me, the hypocrisy of these folks talking about integrity and honesty and the American way.
I know.
Is straight up bull. You know?
Straight up.
You know, so don't say a damn thing to me, because there's no doubt in my mind that Donald J. Trump should be in prison. But here is a prime example of white privilege.
White privilege.
White privilege.
You know, like that's with the Department of Justice, that old slow guy
the Department of Justice?
He's the Department of Justice. He's the main DA or something.
I'm not sure who's in the Justice
the one
Department.
That was, you know, he had the Department of Defense
what about the
government there. But he was making things go so slow. I mean, and it took him forever to.
What's his name? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm blocking his name too. But he was just terrible. This is who the president had nominated.
Well, that's who
the president had nominated this guy.
Right. Biden chose him. In fact.
Biden had chose him. The guy was just diabolical.
He was going to be nominated to the Supreme Court by Barack.
Right, and they blocked him.
Yes. Right, because what did they say? The Republican crackers said, "Oh no, we want the incoming president," because Barack already has served two terms, and this was months. This was months.
Yeah, it's so
easily, they could have easily did this, but they didn't even entertain an interview with him. Ugly ass, two-shaped turtle ass looking dude. his old ugly ass. He said, "No, we're not going to even do that. We're going to wait for the incoming president to make that choice of a Supreme Court nominee." And of course,
I mean, they just ran over Barack.
So Merrick Garland Merrick Garland is his name. Merrick Garland. And of course, he has proven to be kind of weak, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, he's weak.
Yeah, he's proven to be kind of weak. But anyway, so that didn't happen. But when Trump, he nominated and placed three justices. The last one, he had only months.
In a few weeks,
he only a couple months. And yet the Republicans, they didn't say that then. The Democrats said, so the next incoming president should be able to make that appointment. They said no. And Trump made three Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, the Democrats are weak and the Republicans are conniving and diabolical and getting away with it.
Well,
and you know, one of the other amazing things about it, like the sister, Fannie Willis, so she got kicked off the case
I disagree. I disagree. She did, because she should have known how evil this is.
I mean,
she
should have nothing wrong with dating somebody.
No, I don't either. But listen, you got to
Habib,
you got to dot I's and cross T's. Yes, what they did was legal. There was nothing wrong with it. You know, they weren't. You know, yeah. You know, they weren't having extramarital affairs and stuff like that. No.
That's what I'm saying. But that was the point I was going to make. Now, look at who the president is. He was doing adultery. His wife had just had a baby. He was some porn star with adultery. But he can be the president.
That's
but
right.
But he can't even be the dad.
So once again, sister, the bottom line is they can do whatever the hell they want to do. Your ass can't. Because the bottom line is that this is theirs, not ours. And so to me, asking them to do what's right and make it equitable across the board, it will never happen. It will never happen. And to me, Donald Trump's presidency the second time is the clear case why we need to get the hell up out of here. Seriously.
Yeah.
Exodus.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. But this ain't really theirs either. They damn stole this place.
Of course. Listen.
The Native Americans was here. Now, they going to come over here and steal it and say it's theirs. But that's a lie.
Sisters.
They just stole it.
Sister.
And they denied it. And so they we got to.
Listen, dear. Everywhere. Europeans woke up out of a medieval age, a dark age, land poor, resource poor, people poor. And when they woke up out of that dark age and they said, you know what? We may war amongst ourselves, and we do, because we're the most warlike people on this damn planet. But we're going to come together on those who are outside of us. And they developed their renaissance, that awakening, because of why? Because of the Africans who occupied the western part of Europe. And Europe is not a continent, damn it. Europe is
a
damn continent.
Them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the Moors ruled from 711 to 1492 when Columbus, the whole awakening of Europeans, Martel and Charlemagne and so forth, kicking the Moors out of Spain, kicking the Sephardic Jews out of Spain, and then going around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. Everywhere they went, they didn't come to trade. They didn't come to barter. They didn't come to buy. They just came to steal. And that's what they did.
They're the biggest thieves.
Of course they are. The biggest thieves in life. Even though what you just said is true, but it don't make no difference. Because in their world, the ends justify the means, because to them the ends of their dominance in the world justify all the subjugation and murder and supplanting of other people. It justifies that. And what they have done, listen, sweetheart, but what they have done is make us believe that it is, yes, you know what? You're right. Because America and Western civilization, Australia, Central, South America, everything, what these crackers have done is make us believe, yes, we agree with them.
Well, I mean, they made some of us believe it. I know you and I and a whole lot of people, we don't believe it.
Right. Unfortunate, a lot of us do. I would say if you're here in America, most of us do. If you're in Africa, most of us do.
So we're rising up against it. Yeah, that it's have you heard of the? I mean, they're gonna win everything. I think that we should not believe that they are infallible. You heard of the Deacons for Defense?
Of course, I heard of Deacons for Defense.
Yeah,
brothers.
So we be winning a lot of stuff.
In fact, they did have a movie. They had a movie, Deacons of Defense, with Forrest Whitaker in it. Because it's real.
Right.
The Deacons of those brothers took up arms. A brother, Williams, he's another brother that took up arms. Yeah.
And we can win.
And that's that is the fear. See, there is an innate fear of Caucasians against us. And that's why this constant suppression and oppression is real on us. Because they know. If we take the enslavement mindset and break the chains that these crackers have on our minds and begin to think independently, to begin to think, you know, talking about unity and self-determination, liberation and sovereignty, it's over for their ass. It's over.
Right.
Here,
Hold
on, sister. Let me play this particular piece.
What about the other thing? What about the Civil War? The Civil War would not have been won if it wasn't for the Africans that joined that army to defeat.
So what?
Those crackers in the South.
Well, listen, hate to say it to you, sister, like this, but to them, so what? You know? Yeah.
Well, so what? I mean,
yeah, you know, no, seriously.
I'm just saying that the war that the North or whatever was raging, that the Africans were joining it because they were fighting for some liberation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the enslavement and things. And my point was that the African force, but they're a very strong force and mighty, and they, you know.
Okay.
So
yeah. That is true, and it is true. But the reality is, you know, I dominate, I dictate. You know, you don't have no input to my narrative. You know, none. You know, and
you
so I say it as this. I don't give a damn what you say it is. I say it as this. You know. So, I mean, that's the problem that we have, you know?
Yeah,
I was
just making the point that we can fight and we can win stuff, that the white people ain't just infallible. And they wasn't, when they was fighting among themselves, they couldn't win without using the strength of African people. That was my point. So we could fight and win a lot of it, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let me play this. For our people here. Yeah. I thought I had it there, but I don't. I'm trying to look for a piece that I have and I want to. Okay. Nope, that's not it. That's not it.
You find it.
Somebody told me, talking to the mic. I'm doing my best, my brother. I'm doing my best to talk right into the mic. Sometimes I get a little excited. Yeah, I can't find that particular piece. And so anyway, I tell you, we live in a situation, sister, that Either we do this, it becomes something that, you know, when I read the Enyasasim, and I read that today, as I read it every day on this program, the day before and the day of, and on the weekend, the day before, the day of, and the next day. That's what I've always done. So now for years, you know, in fact, Baba Baruti said he's going to bring out another Enyasasim. You know,
oh, wonderful.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I can't wait because, you know, it's dynamic reading.
No, see, he is just such a visionary. Freedom fighter.
Yeah.
He's just awesome.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's one of the many brothers and sisters or cadre of brothers and sisters who are African-centered and who are committed to it. Unwavering, you know, they're serious
unwavering.
About it. Yes, you know, they have given up.
Yeah,
the Barutis have given up a lot.
Morning.
You know, they could, huh?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I'm saying the Barutis, Mama Yah and Baba Baruti have given up a lot. They could have easily been chilling out at Morehouse, you know, or any other institution teaching and so forth. But they realize, the continuation of that kind of mindset and that kind of education is an entrapment for African people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a liberating mindset. We need a mindset that makes us understand how important it is to be self-determining, really self-determining, to be liberated.
Yeah.
And, of course, to be sovereign, that nobody makes decisions for us, about us. We make them ourselves. Everything that is in our purview is of a control that we have. How
Pan Africanism.
Yeah. Yep. Right. There it is. Unify or die. That's the motto of this program: Pan Africanism or perish. Unify or die. That's why I do this. That's why I do this, sister. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is to throw this information out there. That's my lane.
The dedication.
Yeah, that's my lane. I'm
right.
You know,
we plan to fight.
Yeah.
But maybe I can talk to you after the show so we can set up those programs we talked about. I have a hard time reaching you when I call, but maybe right after, I just wanted to just touch base with you about some of it.
All right.
We talk about some speakers.
Sure. All right, dear sister.
Okay. Well, right.
Okay. Peace to you.
Peace. Right. Power
all
love.
Right. All right. This one was interesting by this Caucasian, you know. And this is interesting for us because it is who we are, you know. Brother Marty Payne sent me this. This is deep. This is deep.
Okay. Melanin pigment, right?
Hold on.
Melanin pigment, right?
Right.
It's so unbelievable, George. They use it in computer chips now because it has an ability to transduce electrical energy. Can you imagine this? It has this incredible ability to hold on to and transduce and manipulate electrons, electronic energy, and photons, photonic energy. It's a fascinating molecule.
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Raven. I was doing research on the melanin molecule. Found out that researchers are exploring it as a semiconductor for implantable bioelectronics to treat diseases like Parkinson's. My mind was blown. Sounds like a lot, but it's actually really cool. Electricity is all about the flow of electrons, which are these teeny tiny charged particles. These charged particles move through a material called a conductor. Conductors, like metals, let electrons move freely, while insulators, like rubber or plastic, stop electron flow. Melanin, it's not just a pigment that gives us our skin, hair color, eye color. It's actually a complex molecule with unique properties that researchers are discovering could revolutionize the field of bioelectronics. It's super cool. Bioelectronics are a class of medical devices that use electrical signals to interact with our body's biological system. These devices often involve advanced materials like semiconductors or biocompatible materials to help electronic components communicate with living tissues. Melanin is super special because it acts as a semiconductor. It can conduct electricity under certain conditions. And this property has caught people's attention who are considering melanin as a potential material for implantable bioelectronic.
Right. Ain't that deep? Yes, it is. Yeah. Melanin. I know you've heard Dr. Africa and many others, and there have been melanin conferences and so forth. So this information is not new, really. It's something that has been known, you know, particularly by us. But yet, the application of it is still, you know, needs to be dealt with, and how it can do what it can do, and how beneficial it is, because we have it. You know, something was very interesting back in the 70s with us as a people, and that was the Atlanta child murders of Wayne Williams. Many people didn't believe that Wayne Williams did it, but a story that was on the fringe of it, not the one that you got on the news. The murders here, the founding, the Chattahoochee River that flows through here in Atlanta, you know. But that these children, there was something within us as a people, Melanie, that could help with the research of cancer and so forth. If anybody remembers that, give me a call at 215-490-9832, you know, that those murders were not done by Wayne, all those murders were not done by Wayne Williams, if he did any. Because, you know, we have research hospitals here, serious research. the Center for Disease Control is here, you know. We have serious research hospitals here in the Atlanta area. And it is not far-fetched that these things could have been done in a clandestine manner. And give the impression that they're done over here, but all the while, it's happening right here, you know. So, and also too, I even read an article about prisoners, because you know the most people in prison is us. Damn, like I say, every social ill in this society is more profound in us than anybody else. And that's just a fact, family. That's just a fact. And as soon as we can break the monopoly that this cracker has on our minds, our liberation is possible. Things will happen for us in a way that, you know, we'll begin to make those kind of changes. Yeah. Let me run this one too. This is a good piece here about this Caucasian old dude talking about what America's about.
Europeans come to this continent, literally ethnically cleanse the indigenous population out of existence, kill them on a scale that has hardly been equaled by the millions, and refer to them as savages. That's an achievement. Who's the savage? If you go, the first time I encountered this was in a little town in Massachusetts called Deerfield, or Old Deerfield. It's a reconstruction of what that little town looked like in colonial America. And so the houses are redone to look like they did then. Very nice job. It's a tourist thing. You go there and you look at that. And in front of each house is a plaque that explains something about this house. It was inhabited by the Yipsy Doodle family or whatever it was. And then description. On the 18th of October of 1702, the savages attacked. I remember the first time I saw this, the savages. You come in here, destroy everything these people have, and they are the savages. That's an interesting move.
It is.
You know?
I hadn't thought of that before.
Think about it.
Yeah, because that's how it is. Yeah. That's it. That's how it is. Okay. Yeah. Because they are the savages. They are. But they put that on others. That's why Urugu is a great book. Marimba Ani's book, Urugu, to me has been the Bible. It is really what has fortified me in my mindset in terms of African reality. Urugu. I don't hate. Let me say this, brothers and sisters. And I know if you've listened to this program over the years, I've always stated, I don't hate anybody. I don't. I think I'm a very loving kind of person. And I've gotten along with many people. You know, I worked in the fire department with Caucasians, you know, which is always interesting in working for the fire department because you live with Caucasians. You sleep there in the firehouse. You know, you work side by side with them, you know. And that happens across this country. And that's why the fire service is the most racist occupation, because Caucasians did not want people of color, particularly us, in the fire service. And that's why in the late 60s, early 70s particularly, they had affirmative action programs, not just for other occupations, but for particularly the police department and the fire department. Because why? Those jobs were paid by the taxes of the citizens. They're public works jobs. And so understanding that those jobs should also reflect the city it serves. So if you have a city that's 30% us, but the fire department is, you know, 90% Caucasian male, there's something fundamentally wrong with that. It's like taxation without representation. No, it is taxation without representation. And so affirmative action programs were initiated and they begin to change. Well, let me say something to you, dear brothers and sisters. Check with the fire department in your city. What is your city population? What is the percentage of city population? And then check with the fire department. Not so much the police department, because they understood that y'all need to police these areas. You know, y'all need to go up in the ghetto and police these folks. You know, beat these Negroes, upside the head. But the fire department, because they sleep there, they work there, you know, they didn't want that. Before I left the Milwaukee Fire Department, almost, y'all, almost 20 years ago, family. Wow. But we've had, I'd say our percentage was probably about 15-20%. You know what it is today? 8. That's right. Departments are downsized. And the numbers of people of color, particularly us, because even in Chicago, it's the same thing. New York was historic. New York was the prime example of a fire department who was steeped into racism. Historic, systemic racism. 9/11 brought that out. The incident that happened, the inside job. Okay, and I know September's coming. My annual inside job, my annual 9/11 rant, the inside job in 9/11 is, and yes, it is. In fact, they're about to kill some Arab person for 9/11. Yeah, go ahead. You do what you do. No, 9/11 was an inside job. No doubt about it. I don't give a damn what anybody says. I don't give a damn what anybody says. That thing was planned by this government. And so, you know, the issue is that they control it. They control it. And so, we're coming up on the top of the hour. But they do. They control it. So I don't give a damn what they say. Their whole mindset is to eliminate us. And so the fire department, because of 9/11, showed that New York had 11,000, only had about 300 fire of us. 343 firefighters died at that incident. 343. Only 12 were us. Now, of course, we can say, yeah, I'm glad only 12 of us died, and I understand that. But based upon what it should have been, if the fire department of City New York was equitable, unfortunately, a lot more of us should have been there on that job. And unfortunately may have suffered that consequence. But the bottom line is the documentary, All Our Sons, narrated by Alfre Woodard, brought it out. And you can watch All Our Sons. I may be on YouTube. I'm always telling you to go to YouTube and do that, please. Maybe you can catch it on YouTube, All Our Sons, or PBS, because that's where it aired. Narrated by Alfre Woodard. And so they brought that out in the documentary. And that led to the Vulcan Society of New York, the Black Firefighter Association, the Vulcan Society of New York, to have a suit against New York that is still ongoing. They're still trying to get us, you know, the numbers on the department as it should. You know. So that's the history. There's no other occupation more discriminatory than the fire department, because of this unique working arrangement. You live. And they didn't. I mean, the horror stories that I have about Milwaukee and the history of Milwaukee. And like I said, now they've downsized the department from 1,100 people to 800. 300 jobs have been lost, and we're under from a high of about 150, I'd say we were, to 90 or 80 we have now. So that's the history, family. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to you. That's right. You know, whatever you want to talk about. If there's something happening or something going on. Yeah. So I had some technical difficulties that we're going to correct, hopefully. by the time that we meet again, you know. And so I tell you, Jazz Crusaders. I'm going to play some Jazz Crusaders again. I love the Jazz Crusaders. I really do. And a lot of the acts that I know that I really felt deeply about and fell in love with, I heard them at more intimate settings. You know, at a nightclub, you know, not necessarily at an arena or a big coliseum like that. And so you really feel them. And there's some jazz clubs like that here that I say that were pretty good. So let me try this. I tell you. Let me try this. Okay. All right, family. This is African Perspective. You stick with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and Black Talk Radio Network.com. Yeah. The Crusader. Sample, Wilton Felder, and Henderson, all them cats, man, they just dynamic. They really are. Yeah. Gotta find out what's happening with why that thing didn't play, you know? I tell you. It's a Yo Show Friday. Give us a call and know what is on your mind, what you want to talk about. I tell you, there's a lot to talk about, I know. You know, it's a lot happening. And it's going to be interesting these next few years here. And, you know, there was always, for me, I've been a Pan-Africanist for a long time and wanting African people to come together. You know, and I remember when Ronald Reagan became president, and I thought, man, this cat is whack. So maybe we can, maybe this... this will bring us together. He'd be so oppressive. And so, well, he was slick with it, but he was still very, I mean, I consider him the worst president because from an economic standpoint, what you see now. In fact, let me play that piece with the oligarchs since I did talk about that before. And I'm going to find that particular piece. Yeah, with these oligarchs. Yeah. Check this out.
There's so much to discuss here. You've talked though for some time about how this entire system is rigged, and it is rigged against working Americans, and rigged for billionaires. And you've said also people like yourself who made a lot of money in the markets, been very successful, but the tax system is and again, this was, you've been saying this for years now. Talk about how this is accelerating. You talked about the Elon Musk example. Talk about how this is accelerating and how this, and I say this as a small government conservative, this is a threat to American capitalism. This is, you know, we can look at a lot of different threats facing this country, but moving towards this sort of oligarchy with all of these monopolies. And I've always told the story before, you know, during COVID, somebody called me up and said, "Hey, you need to invest in the stock market." I don't really do that. I don't trust the stock market. I don't want. He goes, "Just invest in the monopolies." I go, "The monopolies?" He goes, "Yeah. Meta, you know, invest in Meta and Amazon and Microsoft," and he named five or six, and they are, they're, like you just said, they're monopolies. Lena Khan tried to break it up, and you seriously would have thought that Karl Marx was marching down, you know, Wall Street, and you combine that combination that you're talking about with the fact that billionaires are getting richer and richer by the second, while screaming socialism, and what does that say about where American capitalism is going over the next 5-10 years?
I think it comes down to a basic question: what is America? And I would, my kind of economic role model is Peter Drucker. I think an economy in America exists to create a robust middle class. The most ascendant countries over the last 20 years have been China and India, and it's a one basic litmus test. How many people are you bringing into the middle class? The greatest innovation in history is not the iPhone or the semiconductor, it's the American middle class. The beat back fascism in the middle of World War II has financed and built the greatest innovations, whether it's radar, whether it's the internet, whether it's vaccines. The middle class in America is the greatest innovation in history, and people like to fall back into this right-wing notion that it's naturally self-healing. It's not. It's an accident in history. Typically throughout history, you have a small number of people who weaponize government. They're very talented. They aggregate power. They weaponize government, and they aggregate more and more spoils. And then the good news is it's self-correcting. This level of income inequality is usually self-correcting. The bad news is the means of self-correction are typically war, famine, or revolution. And if you want to talk about tax policy, the myth in tax policy is that the rich don't pay their taxes. That's just not true. The fulcrum is the following. There's super earners and super owners. The folks around your table are probably considered super earners. You make exceptional livings, but it's all current income reported on a W-2. And if you live in New Jersey or New York, you're probably paying 48 to 52% tax rates.
Right.
But if you're a super owner, I make my living starting and selling businesses. My last business, which was sold for $160 million, I'm very transparent about money. This gestalt or zeitgeist that people should not talk about money is nothing but an attempt to keep poor people down, because rich people talk about money all the time. It's important to be financially literate. The first $10 million for my $160 million sale was tax-free. My effective tax rate over the last 10 years has been 17%. The average tax rate on the wealthiest 25 Americans is 6%. Corporate tax rates are at their lowest point since 1939. At the same time, taxes have gone up for the super owners. Now, the bottom 50% don't pay much federal income tax, but they pay a lot in usage and consumption taxes. But this misdirect talking about tax rates misses the point. It's the tax code, which has gone from 400 pages to 4,000. And that 3,600 pages, quite frankly, is there to screw the middle class and continue to transfer more money to the super wealthy. The fastest growing demographic group in America is not seniors. It's not Latins. It's billionaires. We had 500 billionaires 10 years ago. We now have 2,500. So if you want to cram more and more wealth into a smaller group of people, we're on our way. And the weird thing about America is that we support it because our superpower is our optimism. The Achilles heel is that 99%, the bottom 99% who are getting screwed, don't mind these policies because they believe at some point they're going to be in that 1%. But where are we? We're in a country that's had unprecedented prosperity, but similar to the way William Gibson described the future, it has not been evenly distributed. When 40% of U.S. households are struggling with some sort of medical or dental debt, when a quarter or 20% of households with kids are food insecure, and yet we have one man, Jensen Huang, and I like Jensen, who is now worth more than Boeing. I mean, something is wrong here. And just let me go to the psychology of happiness. I think a lot about happiness because I struggle with it, Joe. You effectively, once you get above a certain level of wealth, you get no incremental happiness. So why on earth would you not go back to a tax policy of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where say above, pick a big number, 10 million, you actually pay more than 10%, maybe more than 20%, maybe more than 50%, because the difference between 30,000 a year for a household and 50,000 is enormous to the well-being of that household. Low-income kids in low-income households have higher resting blood pressure. But the difference between making 10 million a year and 15 million a year offers you no happiness. But these individuals have weaponized government, and we risk revolution, whether it's CEOs being murdered in the street, whether it's a Me Too movement that had righteous components of it, or Black Lives Matter. What are these movements? They are targeting the wealthy. We are in the midst of a series of small revolutions to correct income inequality. And the reason we put an insurrectionist and a rapist in office is because for the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. Why? Because the majority of households are having the oxygen sucked out of the room such that a small number of individuals and a small number of companies can be worth more than nation states. Income inequality is out of control. Our tax policy has gone full oligarch.
The oligarchs. Yeah. Yeah, family. That was our program last week, wasn't it? Yeah. The oligarchy. I'm going to keep that like that, peace. Because that's real. That's real. And he's one of them. He's not an oligarch, but he's there. He's with the big money people, but he understands the dynamics of what's happened. What's happened to the majority of American citizens. And if you know that the majority of American citizens are being, you know, fucked over, imagine what's happening to us. Exactly, family. Exactly. So, I envision, you know, a lot of times these future movies are so dystopian that the scenery is thus chaos and so forth. And of course, those who have the serious wherewithal, the rich, they're in a bubble. They're in an area where it's highly fortified. They have their own private security force, you know, with license to kill. While the people on the outside, you know, just scavenging for themselves because of their greed. I think that if there is a billionaire to be admired, it would probably have to be Warren Buffett for what he has done over the many years of continuing to make money, get money, but fund programs that help people, you know, give a lot of money away and pay his fair share of taxes. Every so-called billionaire should be made to pay their fair share of taxes. When you say 10 years ago there was 500 and now there's 2,500, whoa. And of course, if there are that many billionaires, there have to be a lot of millionaires. And of course, what he said in the piece, that we don't challenge that because why? The mass majority of people, the 99%, that's only 1%. The 99% don't challenge because why? They believe too that they'll be that. Because what does the society perpetuate? Individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what America is. That's what Western, so-called Western society is. Violence, greed, materialism, individualism, that rugged individualism. Individualism is a European Caucasian desire, but collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. We are a collective people. We would not have been able to build the societies that we have built, that have come to be acknowledged over the last 40 years maybe. Zimbabwe, Kemet, these are all African. And the reason why it was so dynamic is because they were built not through slavery. These societies, these great civilizations were not built by enslaving people. They were built by the people themselves in honor of the leadership, in honor of their gods. Look it up, family. Look it up. And of course, you know, I hate the word slave. You know, we might do a program on when you see particular words, hopefully your mind automatically. And you know, I do that a lot in reading some of the things that I read, because I don't use the word slave. I'll use captive, because that's what we were. When you begin to understand that we were captives and not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We've never submitted. We always resisted. We always fought. But we have been captured. We were captives. And what would a captive want to do? Get free. We won't submit. That's what a slave would do. Submit. I am your slave, O master. I do your bidding. That's why you need to listen. You know, that's why you need to listen to some of the some of Malcolm's old pieces. I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna play that one piece, Mr. Grassroots and stuff like that, Ballad of the Bullet, because they're still as germane today as they were, you know, when he put them out there. There's no doubt about it, you know. Yeah. So, give us a call, family. If you want to get on in on this conversation, got something you want to say? There's a number of you are in the queue, and you know it. There's a number of you in the queue, and you know what to do. Hit star twice. Hit star twice, and you can be a part of this conversation. So I'm not going to open it up for you. Do it yourself. Hit star twice, and give me a question, a comment, or concern that you have. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, Donald Trump is an idiot. He is. And now he wants Greenland. He wants Canada. The pressure on Trudeau was so great, he's resigning, but he won't be able to resign until I think it's March or April. You know, so he'll still be in that mix. You know. Yeah. Yep. So give us a call, family, at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. I'm gonna look for some more good stuff. I know Brother Irv sends me a lot of good stuff. Yeah, my good brother is safe where he is. I talked to him. I talked to my other good friend Rick. He's safe too, you know. But this is it's serious, and even though just as Sister Habib was saying that many of the homes that are affected in Malibu, right on the ocean, just tens of millions of dollars. You know, Pacific Palisades, you know, and other communities. I mean, everything in L.A. is high. You know, even in Watts or, you know, Compton, you know, all of it's high. So, yeah. Let me play this piece for you. This is a good piece here. Oh, let me read from my sister. She sent a piece. She sent a piece. Poet. Yeah. Let me read. Because she's from L.A. She's from L.A. Sister Andre. For my beloved birthplace, for the hills I would drive into to escape, to dream, to marvel at the coast's beauty, to call out to God. This is a forced poem because the words are buried by tears, by grief, by agony. This is a forced record to mark our collective pain. This is a devastated poem, a drought poem. a destruction poem, a fuck you to the deniers of climate change poem. Hydrants are unable to keep up with the with this extreme demand for water. Our souls are unable to keep up with this extreme demand for election. Carter, Bourbon Street, PAC, mourning. We are mourning, winds of mourning. This country, mourning. Our heartbreak is 0% contained. Leslie Unray. That's right. Many of these fires are 0% uncontained. Burning out of control. Where water is needed all over here and all over the place. There's 6 fires burning. I think, too, are in control. I mean, after all, if it burns out all the fuel, that's why in firefighting, particularly, these are not grass fires, okay? But in grass fires, what they do sometimes is they set fires. That's right. They set fires. They set what is called backfires. So once that fire is coming a particular way, they know it's coming that way, they'll set a fire. And so once that fire gets there, there's nothing to burn. It's already been burned, and it burns itself out. But this situation, no. Man. Yeah. Sister's a beautiful poet. I thank my lady for that. She's always sending me good stuff. I appreciate that. Appreciate all the good stuff. Little happy face boy. yeah. You know, I tell you, it's really sad. It's really sad that our condition is the way that it is. But the best part about it, family, we can do something about it. We can do something about it. You know? Good afternoon, Jay. Good afternoon. How you doing, bro?
Hey, what's happening, oh?
How you doing, man? I'm doing well.
Is it really, really snowing in Atlanta, bro?
Oh, yeah. Serious. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I sure saw is. That, and oh. I could not believe it, man. I'm like, what the hell is the world coming to? Man, a lot of getting snow. And I heard it was sticking too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That was the thing.
Oh yeah,
that
because well it's
up.
Been cold. It's been cold. Had the temperatures been normal for Atlanta and then suddenly this snow happened. No, it wouldn't have stuck. It would be a lot of,
right.
You could see a lot of pavement. There might have been, definitely be stuck on grass and roofs and on your car. But on a lot of the pavement, the sidewalks and so forth, no, it wouldn't have been. But what's going to happen, and that's happening now, is it's raining. It's sleet. It's ice. And then it's going to get colder. And so there's going to be, you know, ice. Because you know the rain helps melt the snow.
Because you know, fools can't drive.
That's why. Listen, Jay. That's why I ain't gonna take my ass out there, dude. Because I know.
Nah, man, don't do it.
No,
don't do it.
I know how to drive. I have experience driving in snow, and this ain't ordinarily. This would be nothing. This would be nothing, even if you didn't have four-wheel drive or front-wheel drive, preferably four-wheel drive, but more importantly, front-wheel drive, because the heavy part of the engine, you know, gets you through that snow. Rear-wheel drive is kind of tough sometimes because you can easily get stuck, especially if you're not an experienced driver. I've seen many people park their car and try to get out, and they can't because they don't know how to do it. You know?
Yeah, man. I drove many years professionally, man, and I can tell you, man, it's no joke driving a vehicle, man, in this type of weather, man. Right. You know, and then don't get caught up in the black ice situation or something like that.
Oh, no.
These retards will absolutely kill you.
Well, the thing about black ice, it, even if you're an experienced driver, you could hit a patch of it and it's your ass.
Oh, of course.
You know, even if you're the best driver, you can hit a patch of black ice and there you go. You're sliding off into something, hitting something, over something, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've dealt with black ice maybe twice in all the years that I drove, and thank goodness I came out of the situation safely. I see that they sentenced your boy now. Can we refer to him as a convicted felon or whatever? But it don't seem like it means nothing.
No, it doesn't. Of course it doesn't. It's symbolism without substance. That's symbolism. They just wanted to make sure you have it on record. He is a convicted, sentenced felon.
And it means nothing.
And it means nothing. He served no jail time. He ain't got to pay shit. He ain't got to do nothing.
You know, his boy Cole got convicted of the same things, and he went to jail, and they tried to torture him and all of that. But here it is, this demented dirtbag.
Yeah.
He's what you call him. He's you know, now gonna go into the presidency and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a sad affair, man, for society to have to witness this bullshit. But you know, America
gets
what it deserves.
Man, you said you said the same thing at the same time. America gets what it deserves.
No question. You know, I was talking with a friend of mine out in California, man, and he was telling me about, you know, what's going on with the fires out there, man, and how, you know, you have these people who like to separate themselves from black people and go into their little bit of enclaves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yo, man, they losing it all, bro.
Yeah?
They losing it all. And you know, the black community, they're not being burnt out the way that the rest of them are. And, you know, he was saying how you have to be sympathetic. I always reply this way. When you talk to me about being sympathetic to anything that's harmful to white people, I just say one thing to you. Think about your ancestors. That's all.
Hey.
We ain't gotta go into nothing else other than think about your ancestors. Show some concern for that part of the equation of society and the world. Because the way my ancestors suffered, I give less than a damn about any cracker that suffered in any type of way, because my ancestors suffered the ultimate atrocities, brutality, and still do.
Listen, brother.
I mean, they just showed you what white privilege is.
Yes.
And the crazy thing is, this ain't even decent white man like Jimmy Carter. Think about the two most powerful white men in this country, it seems right now, are both effing white trash.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that they're in the position that they're in is because they have some sort of semblance of wealth. Because I don't understand, and I ain't never gonna understand how we have allowed ourselves in this country to have this Elon Musk be in the position that he's in to do the things that he's doing. I mean, how you gonna, and I say this all the time, how you gonna convince me to give up what I worked hard for so that you can have more money in your pocket that you'll never be able to effing spend, but I can't get back what I put into the system? It's like, I don't understand the logic of people.
Well, let me just...
And the thing that gets me the most is, ain't nobody doing nothing to fight back against this shit that's
because
about
Because you know what? Because there ain't. Just like, I don't know, you obviously don't listen to me sometimes before you call in. You just, oh, Brother Oshie's on. Let me just call in and, you know, I play some good stuff, man.
It's when I wake up, bro. You know, I don't get up usually before 12.
I hear you, Jay.
You know, when you ain't got to work, you ain't got to get up.
And that's right.
That's what people like you should be doing. It's called the retirement.
Listen, man. Listen, I have been getting up like I still go to work, Jay. I've been off the fire department for about almost 20 years. My last time in the firehouse was 2006. It is about to come up on 2026 next year. But I still get up early. I still go to bed late. When I was working in the fire department, working 24 hours on, 48 hours off, I would be one of the last cats to go to bed at night and one of the first cats to get up in the morning. That's just how I've been. I still, unfortunately, do that, man.
I don't get to sleep till around maybe 5, 6 in the morning. I'm usually up around 11:30, 12, man.
Yeah.
So I know what you, I know what you feel. But the thing is, though, this. How is it the society is so oblivious to what about to happen to them? And it's like it's no pushback, it's no fight back.
Sure.
And the thing that gets me is, you would think the ARP and other so-called organization that's protecting the interests of these white people would be doing something, some sort of pushback, but it seems like they're going to allow this guy to get away. And I'm being honest with you. I want my Social Security at 62. I don't need the money, but I'm not going to...
No, you deserve it. You worked. Listen, man, you earned it. That's right. You earned it. That's money you earned. The perception is it's some entitlement program that they just give you. No, you earned it. You paid into it. It's something you've earned. Just like my pension. I don't get very much money from Social Security, but I got a pension, and truly, I earned it. So, I mean, you know, the bottom line is this is a society. Once again, Jay, if you listen to this program, I know that you do. That this society is about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's what the society is. And so therefore, listen to this. So therefore, on the individualism side, many Caucasians, they don't want redistribution of wealth. They don't want the wealthy to be taxed like that. They don't want, because why? They feel that I'll get lucky too. I can be one of those billionaires. I can be one of those millionaires. I could get a lawsuit, or I can get an inheritance, or I can strike it rich with an idea, whatever. So no, I don't want equity. I don't want fairness. I don't want justice. I want to maintain the greed that this society has, because me too, it could be me, and I want that for me, you know?
Hey, listen, man, my old lady is sick, and you know, it's a possibility that she won't even get to collect her Social Security.
Well, listen, hold on, Jason, before you say another word. I advocated many years that we shouldn't pay into Social Security. If your ass is working, paying into it, and your ass die young, well, old white women, they last the longest on the planet.
Yep.
In this society, I ain't saying the plan, but in society, and so they have the advantage. They can, they'll collect that money from 60 some years all the way to 80, 90, you know, but you who worked hard to pay into it, you know, and especially like fire departments, those firefighters, our death rate after working. So that's why I'm saying I'm 20 years.
I beat the odds.
And I'm going to further beat the odds because my ass is going to get at least 4 score. That's 80 years. I'm going to try hard. Yeah, I need to change something.
Like my brother.
Plus.
My brother, he's a correction officer, man. And like the thing is that they say that once you retire from that job, you ain't got that long to live.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's like certain jobs, they say, once you retire, things are not that grand. So I was laughing with him because I said, I got 2 to go. You got 4 to go. He said, you better believe it. The day I can get it, I'm going to get it. Because the reality is, I mean, the money. It's the fact that you worked 40 years. They took that money, and like I think it was for 5 or 6 years, I was at the level where they took the most. I was at the high bracket, and it was painful. But the thing is, we live in a society now that you're gonna let some rich billionaire who don't need the money, don't use the money or anything like that, take away what you worked for so that he could get more.
Right, exactly.
And I don't understand I want to hear the fight back, bro. I want to hear my congressman, my senator, what you call. Matter of fact, I called Chuck Schumer's office and I told my assemblyman, I told him, yo, you got to stand up and fight for these people. Because, listen, I get sick of having to get my art money. I ain't even gonna lie to you. I get sick of giving our money. And I love her to death.
Yeah, but she can't. But see, your her lifeline. She couldn't make it without you. Because why? The other stuff is not there.
She got 3 kids that are worthless. She got 3 kids. She got 3 kids. She shouldn't really have to ask. But I don't mind. How old are those young adults?
Man. They're in their 50s. Yeah, 50s, 60s.
50s, 60s.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're in their 50s and 60s. Exactly. Man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And the sad thing is, my aunt is a real, real good person. So and she took care of me, basically. Yeah. So I can't tell her no, but I'm not going to sit up there and say that I don't want to. And you know what the funny thing is? This is the thing that gets me in. She's the type that if you try to tell her something, she want to give you a hard time. So I got to go to the point to where I got to tell her I'm going to cut you off. Because there's some programs out there for her that she wasn't taking advantage of that I didn't even know about until a woman had told me about it. And because her caseworker had called me. Because she gave her contact. And there's programs to where, you know, you could get help.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to get the help because she was going to have to do what they call a spin down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying to her, yo, you're about to get help and take a burden off of yourself. And all you got to do is give these people a check that they going to use that money from the check to pay your bills, and now you'll be able to get services?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
It is.
It's crazy.
Listen, I got some more college J.
If you go in the nursing home, they're going to take everything away from you.
Mm-hmm.
This woman trying to help you to stay out of a nursing home so that you could do certain things, get help, and all of
this. Take your
and
house.
All you got to do is give them $500 a month. She has to give them more. But what they do is they take whatever money you give them, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they use the money to pay a bill. And anything left over, they got in a bank account for you.
But black people don't take advantage of those type of situations. But white folks do.
Well, maybe too. Some maybe don't know about it. That's why you need an advocate. That's why you need a social worker. That's why you need to be informed.
I was so glad when the social worker called me and told me that she was giving her hell about signing up for the program and what you call her. I said, okay, I'll take care of it.
Good.
I called her up. I asked her, what's the issue? What's the problem? The woman done told you they're not taking no money from you. They're going to use the money to pay the bills. And you saying that you don't want to do it, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you now, don't call me and ask me for nothing if you don't do it.
All right.
And I realize I wasn't playing with her. And she went and did it, and now she's happy.
All right. Well, listen, I got a bunch of other callers. Let me get to them.
Man, enjoy it. And listen, Ocean, keep your butt out the snow, man. Send that grandson out there to shovel it. And if he gives you any problems, tell him you still ain't too old to whip his ass.
I know that's right. All right, Jay. Take care. Peace,
all right, brother.
Peace. Have a good weekend.
You too, man.
All right. Brother Irv, what's happening, man? How you doing, man?
Talk Brother to me. Ocean. How you doing, Brother man? Ocean, are you, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good. I know you're safe, and so I'm happy to hear that. And I called a few other folks out that way, man, to make sure that they're – but, man, it's all around you, ain't it?
Oh, yeah, it's all around me, man. But, you know, I'm protected, man. God got me. God that brought me this far, God can bring me the rest of the way.
Okay.
The spirit of the Lord is just powerful. But I'm listening to the conversation that you're having, and I wanted to make comments. The comment I wanted to make was, my brother Jay, with all due respect, said that I don't understand how Elon Musk got into office, and I'm going to call. I talked to my congressperson or whoever, politician. I want to say this. First of all, we know how he got in because a lot of people are living in the illusion of inclusion. Mm-hmm. How we let him get in? First of all, who the hell is we? Because we're not a part of this. Nobody. Donald Trump has none or very limited people with pigment in their skin
not in his circle. There ain't nobody in this circle. He ain't taking advice from no brother or sister.
No.
And it's all about money. So, it's always been about money.
Yeah, so let's stop acting as if we don't know how this happened. You know, we know exactly how it happened. We know this country, and it's been running on oligarchs forever.
Yeah.
But the reality is it comes from the European. The European does this. The queen has blue blood. No, the queen is just like you. But see, you saw that. In a two-tiered justice system. Mm-hmm. Rich people get one justice,
that's right,
and poor people get another.
That's
and this
right.
was just shown, illustrated to you by the fact that Trump was sentenced. Sentencing means to what, Baba Oshie?
Right.
A corrective measure to correct behavior. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
No, yes, right.
Sentence, I'm going to sentence you. I'm going to correct your behavior.
Right.
This is your sentence. This is your punishment.
This is your punishment. It was all symbolic. It was symbolism without substance. That's what it
there
was.
There you are. Symbolism without substance. You're absolutely correct. So when we say we don't know how we got it, but what we do is we start to talk like Arugu. You know, I got this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do that. How about we going to do this? How about us? Collectively, we're going to do something because we all got problems. But if we act like a Rugu and have that rugged individualism, I'm different. No, you're not. You're not different. Need a pint of blood and see where you get it from. Anybody that'll give it to you. So stop it. It's the mindset that we let a Rugu implant in our brain, which has been going on ever since we've been here. It's called The Miseducation of the Negro. It's a book. Read about it.
Ain't hidden. Carter G. Woodson.
They're not hiding from you, but you don't see it on TV. You don't see, they'll sell you all of Motown's greatest hits, you know, and for easy payments. You just pay shipping and handling. Operators are waiting, but they won't send you a collection of African historians, a collection of their work to tell you how you got here, why you here, and where you need to go.
Right.
We have a blueprint for black power. by Amos Wilson. We ain't got to reinvent the wheel. It's already been written.
Right.
But if we're still standing here at all talking about, oh, man, how the hell this goddamn guy get in office? I don't know. Do you know? No, I'm going to know. Let's go get something to drink. No, bro. Stop. We're smarter than that. And I know I can take care of me. I know you can take care of you. But let's take care of each other.
I say.
That's that. If my brother's in trouble, I'm in trouble.
That's right.
It's about Mother Africa. Brother Ibrahim Touré, Captain Ibrahim Touré, is standing up to these imperialists.
Right,
the
I love it.
And we got to let people know that if Burkina Faso is kicking out the French, they're using the Russians, and they're using the Chinese people. When they get done with them, they're going to kick them out too. Same way this white man is kicking your black ass out of America because he don't need you no more. And that's why we don't see no get out the vote tables by the Koreans or get out the vote table for the Jews. But the black people got get out the vote, please. We're going to vote for our candidate. But vote don't mean a damn thing. Did you give a donation to the inauguration? Google did. Did you think Google will get something for that donation? You're damn right. What did you give to it? Nothing. They understand money. This is how they roll. We have to be collective, Baba Ocean. It gets me upset because we it seems like we keep saying the same thing over and over again, and we are the ones that's perpetuating this falsity. We've got to stop it and let our brothers and sisters know money is not to be worshipped. Money is a tool. You use money to get to your objective. Our objective is liberation, sovereignty, self-determination. That's our objective.
Well, you know,
if you're not moving to, go ahead, bro.
No, the thing is about money and everything like that. We need, you know. The most definitive definition of power is Dr. Wade Noble's that I've heard.
Right.
Power's not money. Because if they can change the money you have, it ain't about nothing. If they can if they can change the currency to shells or to bitcoins or da 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 da, and your ass got greenbacks, now they ain't nothing, they ain't worth nothing no more. Then where's the power in that? There is none. You know, power is not money. And even though you see all these oligarchs and you see all these billionaires, just like the piece I played, I don't know if you had a chance to hear it. In fact, I think you might have sent it to me. It's the one that
I did.
Yeah, I think you did. I appreciate you, brother. You know, I love you, man. I love you some Herb Lewis, man. I got to get his African name, man. Get your ass over to Africa. Get you an African name. But anyway,
I'm getting one, bro.
But anyway, you know, no money. That's not money. You know, because that shit could change based upon whoever's in control. No power. Power's not voting. We've been voting, and what the hell's happened? Not a damn thing positive for us in terms of it. So we got a little representation here. But our condition as a people, as a collective people, is worse today than it was 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. No.
And we got more politicians
in
office.
More politicians in office. We have more, particularly on a local level. And they were saying, well, politics is local. How great is it even on a local level? It ain't. So, voting is not power. Politics is not power. You know, education information? Well, if the education information is flawed and inaccurate that it is, you can't derive no power from that. You can get a job. No. You know, maybe get you a career, maybe. But no, that's no power in that. So what is power? He said, power is the ability to define reality. Now, this part I don't like, but this is what has happened. Power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. We have accepted the definition of crackers as if it's our own. And the question that we need to ask ourselves is, who are we in their reality? Because there's no doubt about it that they have defined reality. That's the power. They are the ones that set the narrative. That's the power. And we need to ask ourselves, who are we? in their reality. Well, first, we were the soulless people that justified our captivity, that brought us over here throughout this hemisphere. There are more Africans in Brazil than any continent, any country except Nigeria. Yes, there's more Africans in Brazil than here in America. Yes. Or here in North America. And so, but we don't run nothing there either because we have no power. Power is the ability to define reality. They defined it. And who are we? We're the soulless people, no culture to speak of, justifying our captivity. Who are we today? We're drug addicts, drug dealers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers, the imprisonment, all of that. Fit to be exterminated because we're worth. So I'm saying is that we need to define reality and shape it and fashion it in our image and in our interests. That's what needs to be done. That's why really blueprint. That's why Blueprint for Black Power is an important book. That's why all this information that you bring to this program and I bring to this program is vitally important to help us shape and fashion our image, our reality in our image and in our interests, and not theirs.
That is nothing but the truth, Baba Oshie. I know we have to go, but we have to realize that the only thing that the black people have brought to this country that we can bargain with is sweat. We run the ball. We hit the ball. We catch the ball. We do the dance. Yeah. We sing. We flip.
Yeah.
But have we built institutions?
No.
Have we built banks? Have we built hospitals? Have we built supermarkets? Even if we do get some money, can we go spend it with us? No, because we don't have places. But we have bargained our sweat, our back. That's what we use. That's all the white people want for you is your sweat. I need y'all to dance. $6 million Negro. He an NFL ball player. How many teams do we own?
Yeah.
How many leagues?
None.
How many leagues do we own?
None.
How many teams? Come on now. So to be out there,
I know we only got that much time, but there was a moment in time when the owners of the NBA, the National Basketball Association, locked the players. It wasn't locked a strike. It wasn't a strike. The owner said, you're only making too much money, and so I'm going to lock y'all out, so you're going to uphold to our demands. Because they're still getting paid. But it was at that moment, if Charles Barkley and all them cats back then said, listen, hell with y'all. We're the product. We're the league. We'll play our games in ACBU gyms. And we'll develop our own. We'll make BET have our programs on television because we're the game.
Hello?
You know? But yet
we're college graduates.
Right.
Really?
But yet they capitulated to the NBA as always. And so, you know, dribble that ball. Just like that Caucasian on that radio news program said, just shut up and dribble.
Do flips for me.
Yeah.
Do flips. I don't need you to say nothing.
Right.
But see, they all college graduates, but they learn how to get a job.
Right.
College don't teach you to start a business. It teaches you to work for somebody. I work for IBM. You know I'm a big executive over there. What you own? Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
Nothing. Brother, thank you, Baba Oshie. Thank you. I needed this gas in my tank today. I appreciate that.
All right, my brother.
I can go a couple more days.
Right
I can
on.
Go a couple more days. I'm smacking one of these white folks. Anyway.
Love you, dear brother. Stay safe,
right, man.
Stay safe, brother.
You too.
All right. Peace. My brother Irv, man. He's out there in the fire. Yeah. Be safe, man. And I hope all those others. I know 10 people now have died in the L.A. fires. There may be more. Some people are doing some crazy stuff. They're looting. So there's some people who own stuff and they're going by their places that may not have been burned all the way out. And there might be something to salvage. They come in there with their guns and just, it's crazy. Yeah. Listen, brothers and sisters, have a great weekend wherever you are. Stay safe. You know, it's crazy here with this snow. That ain't going out there because they can't drive. I know how. I know how to drive. I know how. But they can't, so I'm just chill here. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, that means go in peace. Isante Sana means thank you. BB for Hordier. BB for Hordier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.